Our star guest today is equally at home in jazz clubs and on concert stages. Described as following in the footsteps of Ella Fitzgerald and Peggy Lee, Juliette Ewing has become a distinctive exemplar of how to sing the great American songbook. Juliette's artistry is a testament to her extensive experience on Broadway stages and European tours. And on top of that, she's just released her all Gershwin album. It's called Simply Swonderful, the music of Gershwin. I think it's high time we welcomed Juliette Ewing to Community Connections and Reed on the Radio. Juliette, from a very snowy New York, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Wonderful to see you.
Juliette, you have such an amazing musical career behind you already and many, many more years to come. But were you born into a musical family? Is that where this all came from?
Yes, I was. I grew up in the Midwest of the United States in Michigan, and my parents were very involved in the music scene there, not as professionals, but more as fans and mentors. My parents were on the board of the Detroit Opera, so I grew up with a lot of opera. A lot of classical music, but my mother was also an amateur singer, really talented, and she introduced me to the Great American Songbook at a very early age. We had a wonderful album of Bobby Short, who was a famous cabaret singer in New York City, at the Carlyle Hotel, and it was all Cole Porter music, and I fell in love with it at a really young age. We also had sprinklings of some jazz here and there. There's a great Brazil 66 Sergio Mendes album that I loved. And I remember I realized when I was an adult, that's the first time I actually heard a Cole Porter song was done in a bossa nova style, which was Night and Day, which is my favorite love song of all times. So I was exposed to little bits and bobs of it. And my mother loved Bette Midler. So we had her album. So that's, jazz Broadway crossover. And I just grew up loving Broadway music, being surrounded by music at home, and it really being encouraged. All of myself and my siblings, we all played music. We played piano, and I played flute, and we sang. So it was kind of a regular part of our lives to have incredible music playing all the time, to go see the opera, to go to New York City and see Broadway shows. So it was really just very natural for me, and I obviously adored it.
You grew up in Michigan. I don't know an awful lot about the musical history of various parts of the states, but is Michigan known as a musical part of the country?
I would say yes. That's really where Motown was born. You had Aretha Franklin. You had a lot of the famous, really soul and blues singers come up in Detroit. You have the Motown Museum there. So that's kind of, and you also had some famous rock and roll people there. You have, Bob Seger. You have Eminem, who's more contemporary like rap. So there is a lot of that. And it's funny because in New York, I meet so many people from the state of Michigan who are in music. And I don't know, it's something in the water there. Maybe it's the history, the love of music. But there's also a thriving classical music scene as well. You have the Detroit Symphony, you have Detroit Opera. So there's a lot of kind of I call it old car money from the big three automakers. There's a lot of money sloshing around there. And they are patrons of the arts. And I think that's spilled over to all different types of music, whether it's jazz, and classical. There's a lot of that in the state of Michigan. I couldn't necessarily compare it to other states, but I have realized that there's a lot of people from the state of Michigan, the Detroit area, who are, well-known music stars.
You mentioned growing up in a musical family. Did you ever appear with your family in productions at all?
I did kind of locally, my mother and I did. And when I was an adult, we did a cabaret show together. She's more of a classical singer. And she's like, we should really do something together. So I wrote a kind of mother and daughter cabaret show that was really fun. And we kind of did a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But I do remember, kind of as a joke, we did from the musical Annie Get Your Gun, anything you can do, I can do better. So we had a little bit of that. I'm like, well, who does it better, mom? Kind of thing. So we had a lot of fun with it. But there's really no competition. There's just a lot of support. But growing up, I remember my brother would play piano and accompany me. And as little kids, I remember my mother had us go visit our great grandmothers who were in nursing homes nearby. And she would say, we're going to go entertain the older people. So she would get us, my sister and I, my sister would play piano. I would tap dance at like 7 or 8 years old and sing songs for the older people. And my mother would go sing. So it was almost like, it was an extension of our lives, and it was doing doing something nice for the community, we'd go and entertain these people, and they, of course, adored it. And we just thought it was normal. Okay, we're going to go sing. It's a Saturday afternoon. We go, we tap dance, we sing, we play the piano, we entertain people, and then that's the way it is. So it was really fun and very natural for us to do that.
Are you still a close family now?
Yes, we're very close. My family, my sister's a very well-known filmmaker. My brother has a big jazz podcast and is a big supporter of music in New York City. In fact, he did my website. So we're always trying to support each other, help each other. We really enjoy each other's company. In fact, my brother and I went and saw the George Gershwin famous opera, Porgy and Bess, Saturday at the Metropolitan Opera, which I had never seen with a full orchestra. I'd seen it on Broadway and other productions when I was little. And I, of course, knew all the music, but it was actually almost a spiritual experience being there in the Metropolitan Opera on a snowy Saturday with this huge orchestra and this incredible music, this beautiful singing. And honestly, I really told my brother, I said, I might sound crazy, but I feel like George Gershwin is here. I mean, he lived not so far away from here, a couple miles in like a 30-minute walk in New York City, and this beautiful music. So we experience it together. And I loved, of course, the Gershwin music. And so it's a great to be in such a city that has wonderful offerings of music every night.
We will come back and talk about your love of the music of George and Ira Gershwin. But before we do that, let's talk about your very own trio, the Juliet set. Tell us about
Yes.
those.
The Juliet set is really came out of me wanting to play with my trio, not just do solo cabaret shows. So I developed that, and I have a pretty steady trio of Ron Drodos, who's my arranger and my pianist, and I play with a couple different bass players. One is they're all out of New York, Michael O'Brien, Dmitry Kolesnik. So we play when we do a group. We really do, myself, a piano, a bass. Sometimes we add a drum depending on the scene. I'm playing at a jazz club in New York City for Valentine's Day, called Jazz on Main in Mount Kisco, New York. So I always bring my full trio there, piano, bass, drum. So they're all incredible musicians. We play original arrangements of American Songbook songs done by my arranger and pianist, Ron Drodos, who's extremely talented. And we kind of bring a little swing, a bossa nova, a lot of the traditional jazz pieces. So we play all around New York, New York City, and the area here.
Cabaret in New York is such a big part of the entertainment scene. It is here in the UK, but in New York, I think particularly. But there aren't so many clubs now that there used to be, are there?
There are fewer clubs than there were, but I will say a new beautiful club opened up a couple of years ago called Chelsea Table and Stage. And that's where I did my album release event in November. And that has a beautiful room, gorgeous inside, really an elegant experience. So every once in a while, you see a new club open up. There are fewer clubs, but most of them are pretty small, the cabaret rooms. You do have 54 Below, which is a famous club in New York City that hosts a lot of more Broadway people. So there's a few glamorous clubs and much smaller ones. But I do feel like the scene is still really thriving. There's shows every single night of very talented people, and even have big stars, well-known cabaret people coming to the very small rooms like Don't Tell Mama, which is an icon in New York, where I did my cabaret show 4 times last year. And so I think it's definitely there, fewer than maybe before, but you do have things popping up, and people love cabaret. At first, I didn't realize it. I thought it was just the jazz clubs that were thriving so much. But people enjoy cabaret because you really get to know the performer. You're often telling stories about yourself or your experience in show business or your life. And it's a real opportunity to spend about an hour with someone, listening to great music and a great band, and getting to know someone. And even when I go to jazz clubs that are playing, quote unquote, straight jazz music, the audience always loves it when whatever star's there tells a little personal story or jokes with their band or makes an error, forgets a lyric, or doesn't know what's going on. People just love it because they want to have a personal experience. And I feel, especially now when everyone feels threatened by AI and fake music going out there, I find that the music scene in New York and the area is still really thriving. People want that authentic experience. They want to know that the person that's in front of them is real, is singing, is playing, is making mistakes or not, but you feel the love there. So I'm definitely heartened by that. Whenever I go play a gig, I feel like people are responding. They laugh at my little jokes. They want to have a personal experience. So I feel like it's still thriving in the New York area.
Maybe that's a very good point. Maybe the onset of AI will convince people to go back to live performances because they then know exactly what it is they're getting.
I think you're 100% right, because so often we don't really know what's going on the internet. These fake videos, you can't really tell. They're so good now. But when you're in a club, when I'm playing at, Jazz on Main or Winnie's Jazz Bar in New York City, people are seeing, I'm talking to them. They have requests. I make jokes with them. Where are you from? What's going on? What do you like? Are you visiting? And people appreciate that. Especially the tourists who come to a lot of these clubs, they are just thrilled to be in New York. They are thrilled to be hearing this great music, and they really appreciate the moment. So, I try to remember that when people start freaking out about AI and fake music and all that.
Get yourself along to a cabaret venue as soon as you can. That's some pretty good advice there.
Exactly.
Juliet, you have appeared on Broadway and you've appeared around Europe as well. Just zooming in on the time you spent on Broadway, totally different type of performance to cabaret, one where you're further away from the audience. You've got that sort of curtain that cuts you off, if you like, to a certain extent from your audience. Totally different to the experience of cabaret. And I wonder whether not everyone can actually make that jump.
Well, I think that's an excellent point, because when I started in really investigating the cabaret scene a few years ago, having done theater for so long, we had a long talk with my director about that. And the whole idea of cabaret is to kind of bring people to you, whereas in Broadway, often it's really out in front. It's like, volume-wise, it's quite a bit louder, even though you have body mics. It's more presentational. It has to be bigger, because if you're playing for an audience of 1, 2, 3,000 people, everything has to be bigger. Your enunciation, your gestures, your voice. But in a cabaret room, you really get to be, I think, your authentic self. And that's what appealed to me. On Broadway, you have to do pretty much the same thing every night in the same way for the benefit of your cast members and the orchestra. You can't start changing things up. You can't sing, riff on whatever the song you're singing. You can't stand in a different place. You can't make up any kind of jokes or dialogue. You have to be in the same place. And that's what it is. It's a machine. It's a beautiful thing, but it's the same thing. And I did 300 performances plus of two shows in Europe. I did Crazy for You, the Gershwin show, and 42nd Street, which I adore. But 300 times is a lot. And you're like, wow, I'm doing the same thing every night. And you kind of long, or at least I did long, to sing music that really spoke to my heart and interpret it my own way in my own keys with my own arrangements and my own ideas. And that's really the appeal of cabaret to me. But you have to learn how to pull everything back. And some former Broadway people, it doesn't translate well to cabaret. It's too in your face. It's too big. It's too loud in a small room of 50 people. So you have to remember, you have this beautiful microphone. You have people who are very close to you. You have to feel like it's your living room, and you can look people right in the eye, and you can see their faces, where you can't when you're on a big stage. It's just like a white light. You can't see anything. But in a cabaret, you see the reactions, and it can be scary, because you see, are people bored? Are they ordering something more to drink? Are they looking at their iPhones? Hopefully not. You have to kind of get used to that and feel like it's more of a conversation. It's more of a group experience. It's not you presenting something. They both are valid and wonderful things. And I still love being on a big stage, but it's a different way of performing. It's a different way of using your instrument, your voice. It's definitely a different way of approaching things. So you just have to remember, and it's different than being in a recording studio. That is really just your voice. You don't get the benefit of the sets, the lights, the costume, your hair, whatever. You don't have that. You have to really focus on just the words and the beauty of what you're singing and communicating that way. So that is, like I'd say, a third arm of this whole entertainment experience.
As a true professional, Juliet, you've brought us round to the recording of your album. Let's talk Gershwin. I can tell by the smile on your face, which our listeners can't see, this music is just for you, isn't it?
Absolutely. From the time I was a little kid, my grandparents really introduced me to this music. They got my brother and sister and I hooked on all those RKO picture classics with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, those Top Hat and Swing Time. And we were just enthralled by them. And they gave us an album of Fred Astaire singing all these songs. So we just fell in love with that music. and the funny lyrics, and at a young age I could sing all those songs because they were just so charming and so fun and so beautiful to look at. As a little kid, I thought it was the most romantic thing in the world, all these men in tuxedos and the women in the ball gowns, and they're all on a luxury cruise liner in the 1930s, going wherever, somewhere exotic, falling in love, falling out of love, and getting back together in the end. I thought it was the most beautiful thing. But the lyrics of Ira Gershwin in particular really spoke to me, and I just fell in love with them. And when I was studying at university, I got to sing a little bit of Gershwin. And then I was cast, later on in the big Broadway musical, Crazy for You, that George and Ira Gershwin supplied all the music. It's a retelling of the original show, Girl Crazy. And I did that all over Europe for 300 performances. And I also did it in the United States, a couple large productions. And the Gershwin music just stuck with me because you do so many performances, but I really never got tired of that music. I mean, I never got sick of hearing my castmates sing those songs. I never got sick of singing my songs, and I thought they were so beautiful, and it just stuck with me. And when I started going back to cabaret, I really kept bringing up Ira Gershwin songs, the George and Ira Gershwin. I said, "This is great," and we decided, my arranger and I decided to put together a cabaret show. And then out of that, it was so much fun and such a success. I sold out all over the place. And I said, we need to do an album. And so we took the arrangements, and I met with a wonderful producer, Ted Firth, who's a really well-known cabaret and jazz arranger and pianist. He's Michael Feinstein's band leader. He plays with Marilyn May. He's a wonderful guy. He produced the album. We used my beautiful arrangements, and I think it's authentic. It's really from my heart. They're jazz arrangements, but they still harken back to the original way the songs were done. And people have really responded well. They, a song like, Love Is Here to Stay, or They Can't Take That Away From Me, I've Got a Crush on You, and of course, it's wonderful. People, 80, 90 years later, after these songs have been done, been created, people respond to them in live performance all the time. People hear "I've Got a Crush on You," and they're like, "Oh, I love this song. Someone to Watch Over Me. Oh, this is the song that my dad always played for me. I always think of my father." And or "I've sung that for weddings." "Someone to Watch Over Me" is like 90 years old, and that song still speaks to people. So I feel like the music and the lyrics, they still resonate with people today because they're really heartfelt and they're clever. So I will sing Gershwin as long as I can. It's the best music to me.
Well, certainly your rendition of the Gershwin songs, the ones I've heard on the album, are absolutely wonderful. And the hairs on the back of your
Oh,
arms
thank you.
really stand out because you bring something to those songs that, in a way, I've not heard other people bring. And I think that's a sign of a really good singer.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. It makes me very happy. Thank you.
We are going to round our interview off in a few moments' time by playing Swanderful from your new album. Juliet, before we say goodbye and wish you well for the future, what are your plans performance-wise? Will we be seeing you over here in the UK at any point?
Oh, I would just absolutely love to come to the UK. In fact, I'm going to start investigating how I can come to. I know there's a famous club there called Crazy Cocks in London, and I really would love to work there. And I know several cabaret artists in New York who have worked there, so I have to figure that out. So if you have any connections, anybody over there, I would love to bring the Gershwin show there. I'm hoping to get there next fall. So that's my plan. But nothing in Europe right now. I'd love to get over and work in England and work in Italy. I speak Italian. I have family there. I'd love to get in some jazz clubs there. But in New York, I'm doing a big Valentine's Day show. I perform all over the New York area. My cabaret show, my one-woman show, is being turned into a four-person concert, which I'll be doing in Pennsylvania. So in the United States, I'm kind of all around and about, but I'm hoping, fingers crossed, to get to the UK.
We have a number of guests on the program who have appeared or will be appearing at the Crazy Cock, so we would love to see you over here at some point.
Oh, me
Juliet,
too.
how can my listeners find out more information about you?
Well, I'm on social media. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as The Juliet Set. And you spell Juliet, Juliet. And my website is julietewing.com. You spell my name, Julietewing.com. Has videos, has music, all my dates. And of course, I'm on streaming online on Spotify. My album, Simply Swanderful, The Magic of Gershwin, is on Spotify, Amazon, Apple Music, anywhere you can find it.
Basically, you cannot go on the internet without tripping over you somewhere.
Exactly. Well said. Thank you.
Juliet Ewing, thank you so much for joining us. We do wish you the very best for the future. Come back on, particularly when you've got maybe some dates in London. But to round off now, let's play that title track from your recent album. The album's called Simply Swanderful, The Magic of Gershwin. This, of course, is It's Wonderful. Juliet Ewing, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Andrew.
It's wonderful, it's marvelous. You should care for me. Soft and nice, it's paradise. It's what I love to see. You've made should care for me. It's wonderful, it's marvelous, you should care for me. Soft and nice, it's paradise, what I love to see. My dear, it's for
Swan.